Know what time it is?
It's lunchtime with the Habit Master. If you want to get results fast, stop messing around and get serious about your life, one habit at a time. Here she is, the Habit Master herself, Dr. Stephanie Aldrich.
Hey everybody, you know what time it is. It's lunchtime with the Habit Master. I'm your host, Dr. Stephanie Aldrich, and I help people change their bad habits. When they change their habits, you change your life. Today is a very, very special episode. With me, I have on a Zoom link all the way from Canada, Miss Peggy McCall, New York Times best-selling author of The Destiny Switch and 17 other books. You have been so, so busy writing all of these books. How are you today?
Absolutely fabulous. Thank you. I was so excited to get together with you, Stephanie. I love your energy. I love your messages. And I just love contributing to the world.
Well, and I so appreciate you agreeing to be on this call today. I know my listeners and just myself, I learn from you every time I talk to you and listen to anything that you do. So I appreciate you and thank you for being on the call. For people that they don't know who Peggy McCall is, very briefly, tell us what you've done, who you are, and what you're all about.
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much. Well, I am a New York Times bestselling author, the author of 18 books, and Stephanie's right behind me, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
And
I've got your new one today.
Yeah, me too. I got a new one right here beside me. So I am an author. I'm also a business owner, an entrepreneur. I am happily married to my wonderful husband. I'm a mom, a grandma, and my family is my priority in my life, priority number one. And I would say my business is very likely priority number two. I've been in business for over 25 years. I love what I do so much. And my business has really been designed around helping people create better results in their life and helping people determine what it is that they would really love and help them get it manifested into physical form. So that's really in a snapshot who I am.
That's great. So I know you do, you meet a ton of people. You lecture internationally. You I always see you at Bob Proctor's things and you talk about, you know, their information and all of these concepts of how can you improve your life and live it the way that you really want to live? That could be different from what you're doing today. So we're going to start off kind of with a big question, but if somebody, and I'm sure you've heard this at one of your lectures, or, you know, you're grabbing a water, you're using the restroom, you're washing your hands, and somebody comes up to you and they says, "Peggy, my life sucks." Like, how can I change it? Like, how would you even like approach that subject or that question? When I'm sure you've heard that before.
I definitely have heard it. My life sucked, and that's how it is, right? Like, when I think about, you know, January 1979, I met Bob Proctor, and my life was sucking big time, and I just had such a desire. So if someone says that to me, I ask them a question. I ask them a series of questions, and one of the questions that I would ask them is, you want to change it? Because if you don't want to change it, like, you got to have that desire within you to change. Because if you're expecting something outside of you that's going to happen, that's going to change how you're feeling inside, that's a very negative, destructive way of creating. It's not the way it works. So I'll ask them, you know, would you love to have your life changed? And if they say yes, and you know what? Surprisingly enough, Stephanie, some people are like, nah. You know, because then they start to think of, I don't know if I want to do the work. And as you know, as I know, there's work involved. And if people aren't willing to do the work, well, they're not going to reap the benefits. So you've got to be willing to do the work. So if they say yes, you know, that they want to change it, then I'll ask them that question. Are you willing to do whatever it takes, you know, as long as it's legal, moral, and ethical to get to where you want to go? And if that answer is yes, then I'll make some recommendations. It's like, well, what is it that you're looking to create in your life? And as you know, I've got many programs, so I might recommend one of my programs, one of my books or other people's programs. It really depends on what it is that they're looking to create as far as their outcome is concerned. But that's generally where I start, is asking them, you know, do you have a desire? Because desire, as you know, is a starting point. It's a starting point to everything. If you've got the desire, then you have everything within you to accomplish anything you set your mind to.
So, you know, we just talked about, okay, I want it, but I don't want to do the work. Do you think that that's the reason that, or one of the reasons why people will make that big New Year's resolution? It's December 31st, and I am going to lose 20 pounds. And then by January 12th, usually it's like, I'm okay. Yeah, maybe I lost a couple pounds, and hey, my elastic still works in my pants. Do you think that's one of the reasons why? Because they don't want to keep going.
Yeah.
That they don't get the goal that they want.
You know, we're habitual creatures, and your work is all around habits. And I think that's key right there. We're habitual creatures. We're going to do the same things over and over again, but some people expect a different result. You're never going to have a different result unless you change your habits. You've got to change your habits. And habits are so, you know, they become so strong within us. And I know this is what you write about, this is what you speak about, this is your programs, all of that becomes so strong. It is a challenge to change them. It really is a challenge to change them. And so you've got to be disciplined, and you've got to create a commitment that you will make a change in your habits, in your daily habits. Now, it's going to take some time for those new habits to become regular habits, to become natural for you. One of my favorite books is a book by Neville Goddard, which is called The Power of Awareness. And he's written many books, and I've read everything that Neville Goddard ever produced. And one of the things that he says is that the reason why people don't accomplish their goals is because they don't feel it naturally. You see, when you feel you're naturally a success, when you feel you're naturally a multimillionaire, when you feel you're naturally healthy, when you feel you're naturally confident, when you feel you're naturally whatever it is that you desire, you're going to meet with success absolutely every single time. But if it's not natural, which is where it is for most people when they start, those emotions are natural, the feelings are natural, the thinking isn't natural, then you've got to create habits to get to the point where they're natural. However, I will say this, after 41 years of studying, and I met Bob Proctor January 1979, that I still have habits every single day that still continue to build upon the beliefs that have allowed me to experience and enjoy this incredible life that I give thanks for every single day.
Because what I think that most people don't understand is that our habitual routines are not just the actions that we do, are not just how we drive our car to work. We go down this street, we go down this street, we go down this street. But it's also our whole like mentality and thought process. What we believe, hey, I know I can get to work faster this way, even though that might not be what Google Maps says is the fastest way. But we train ourselves to think in a certain way that then makes us do certain actions. And that becomes our whole habitual routine that we do each and every day.
So true. So true.
So I was reading a couple of months ago a book by a Russian physicist. His name was Vadim Zaland. And it was, and I had talked to you about that. It was like 700 pages because it was actually like four books combined into one. Wow. And it was called Reality Transurfing. And what you had just talked about of feeling as if it was just as natural as you know, going and you know, doing something that you do all the time. It's just natural for you to make money. It's natural for you to network with people, to get on stages and be confident and whatever it is. But he talked about the same thing, that if you put yourself, let's say you want to improve your health, okay? I want to get fit. I want to, maybe you have to lower your cholesterol because of, you know, a health concern or something. I need to lose weight too, because that's going to be a result of, you know, being more fit. He talks also about if you just start doing the things that fit people do.
Yeah.
Watch what you eat. You eat more green things. You watch the fat, lower calories, you know, whatever it is. You move your body. You try to get more calories spent than what's put in, as long as you act as if, and you talk about Neville Goddard's book too, books that he talks about, as long as you're feeling what that person feels naturally,
yes,
those things will just happen. You will attract people into your life that will help you with whatever goal it is, or people or persons, or you're selling a product and all of a sudden you have customers and things like that. And he talks exactly the same way.
Yeah, it's so true. It really is. But it's a big challenge for people because they don't know how to do it, or they're not accustomed to doing it. It's not a habit for them to do it. And of course it takes energy and effort. And so I remember, as you're talking about that, Stephanie, I remember years ago, many, many years ago, where I decided to be a multimillionaire. And I remember making the decision, this is what I choose to experience in my life. And I started to declare it, you know, do affirmations, do mirror work and things like that. And I remember when I started, it felt very uncomfortable. I remember standing in the mirror and looking at myself, you know, eye to eye and saying, you are a happy and a healthy multimillionaire. And I was probably whispering it because it just didn't feel, you know, maybe a little embarrassed, even though no one was around at the time. And it's only through space time repetition of affirming that idea over and over again, but more importantly, feeling it. Just like you said, now you got to feel it. You got to imagine it, like the physicist from Russia. You got to feel it right now. So if your desire is to be a multimillionaire, what would that feel like? And the answer that you come up with, or I come up with, might be a little different than somebody else. So it's not a right or wrong answer. It's just, what would you feel? What would you feel? What would you feel were that your manifestation, were that your experience, were that the way you are in life? So when people play with an idea, and that's what you're doing, you're using imagination. When you're playing with an idea, what does it feel like now that I'm a multimillionaire? Like, what happens is quite often people's shoulders go down. It's like they just get a little more relaxed. They're quite often, they're looking up and they're thinking and smiling and really connecting to it energetically. Well, you're just doing it right then and there, right? And as kids, like when you and I were little girls, you know, we could easily play with dolls or imagination and, you know, create something that was, it's the same idea as an adult, but as a kid, you know, we're told stop daydreaming, you know, in school. And what happens is people build paradigms around daydreaming, but this is really a part of the process of really building this new image of what you would love. But most important, more important than anything, is how you're feeling, and that you got to feel it. You got to feel it now. And it's going to take time, especially if it's something you've never experienced before. So for me, I was raised in a 600 square foot home. You know, my parents were poor. My father was a janitor. My mother worked in a grocery store as a checkout clerk. I mean, nothing wrong with those jobs. They're great jobs and they did wonderful work. And they really, you know, brought value to those businesses where they worked. But at the end of the day, you know, with four kids, you know, they come home and they were struggling and trying to eat, you know, make ends meet, and they were angry. And so it wasn't a very fun environment. And I think about, I saw something recently that said that, you know, the foods that are in the grocery stores, oh, it was in a movie that I saw called Drunk Parents.
Okay. Okay.
So this movie, it's on Netflix. So in this movie, Selma and is the actress, I forget her last name, but anyway, she's in a grocery store. And she had previously been wealthy and now she's without money completely. And she's in the grocery store and she's going, why are all these inexpensive foods like so bad for you, right? They're just going to make you so fat. And I remember my parents like not being having money to buy food, you know, and some of the things that we would eat were things like beans, you know, a can of beans for dinner. That's what we would have because that's all they could afford. And I know they didn't have a lot of money to afford, you know, very nutritious, healthy, you know, foods, fresh vegetables and things like that. And so my life was, I was raised in a very poor, impoverished environment. So when I got to, you know, the point where I was an adult, I thought this is the way my life's meant to be. It's supposed to be like this. I used to go to sleep at night, cry myself to sleep thinking, you know, I'm one of those chosen ones that has to live in poverty.
Wow.
And that's not the truth. It's not the truth. Now I know it's not the truth, but you know, when we look at where I came from and where I am today, it's a very different experience. Same girl, you know, the same person, but yet what did I do? What did I do? I changed my beliefs, you know, and I did the work, and I've been doing it for 41 years and I'm never going to stop because it just continues to get better and better and better.
And unless somebody is taught that mind frame, that mindset that anything is possible, you just have to put yourself, you know, align yourself with it and do the work that's necessary, you're never going to get it. But most people aren't taught that. They're taught, oh, you're never going to get out of this neighborhood. You're never going to write a book. Or who do you think you are? Like, yeah. My family is, and even my in-laws are like, you know, kind of like, wow, you wrote a book. I'm like, it's not hard. Like, anybody can write a book, but you do have to focus time and energy and money,
right,
to put those thoughts. And there is a certain way to do that. And I know that's, I mean, you're all about that. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, if you just do what other people have done that have been successful, that are living the life that you want, that's all you got to do. You do the work, you do what they did, and it should come to you.
Right.
Right?
It will. And it will, right? Because the laws always work. They're not something that's just for Stephanie or for Peggy. They work for anyone. They'll absolutely work. But you're talking about doing the work. And that, you know, I always say that, do the work, do the work, do the work. And, you know, sometimes I get confused. What work? And I also believe it's simple work. It's very simple. This is not rocket science we're talking about. We're not building a spaceship to go to the moon. We're just fixing our lives or improving our lives. And so the work is what you offer in the habit, you know, your habit rules, the habit principles and everything, the habit master.
Right.
And it's what I teach as well. I mean, that's really what you want to do. You want to discipline yourself every day that you're in the habit of being a success.
And I always make the analogy of think of a professional athlete. Mm-hmm. They do these amazing catches, or they make this throw, or they, you know, they score 50 points, or, you know, whatever this, you know, magnitude of success is that they build. But what you don't see is the behind the screen, behind the camera, the many hours spent, you know, honing their craft, learning these skills. But what you also don't see is their fundamental skills. It's the same things that a 9-year-old learning how to play baseball would do on the field, but they're not as coordinated. They're not as strong, as big. Right. They can't throw as far, but it's the same exact fundamentals that the professional athletes do. The only difference is they do it to the point where it's so ingrained. They've learned how to put their body into whatever position to make that successful catch or whatever, because they've done it thousands and thousands and thousands of times, where the 9-year-old, he gets bored after, you know, 5 minutes and he's done. And plus he's a little kid, you know, where you got these big like horses out there that are just like so strong and massive. And you're like, wow.
So true.
But you don't see that. And where we talk about improving your life, any area, relationships, health, wealth, whatever it is, even mindset, you don't see that everything really is simple and basic.
It is.
You just are going to practice it over and over and over again every single day.
Absolutely true. You know, you and I were talking before the interview started today about the demand principle, and in there, I talked about Michael Jordan, and I've never been a basketball fan. I like basketball, but I've never really been an avid, fan. And so, but there was a show, another one on Netflix. COVID's invited lots of opportunities for Netflix binging.
That's right. That's right.
And I believe it's called The Last Dance. And it's
watched it.
Oh, isn't it great?
It was magnificent. I wish they would have done it 10 years ago when it was a little more relevant, maybe.
Yeah, but it's so good. There's so many great messages in there. The Last Dance, I believe, is what it's called. And Michael Jordan just talked about how he made a decision. You know, he was a good basketball player, but he made a decision to be the best basketball player. And he was on a mission, not only a mission to be one of the best basketball players, but to be recognized in the world as one of the best. And not only did he become one of the best basketball players in the world, but he was recognized as one of the top athletes for the century. Like, pretty significant. But when you look at what did he do? And it's like that, it just takes a little bit of effort to make a big difference, right? Just a little more effort, a little more effort. And that's why I wrote about him in the demand principle, because he just demanded more of himself. You know, he demanded when he got onto the court that he would perform better. And he got out there to win. He didn't get out there to play. He got out there to win. And he was like absolutely dog with a bone. I'm not letting this go. And I know in The Last Dance, there was one particular episode where they had talked about being in the playoffs and they weren't positioned to win. They weren't positioned, or no, they were near the finals. So the playoffs were going to start and they weren't positioned to even be in the playoffs. And he said to his coach, I didn't come out here to just finish, you know, finish last or to finish in some position that wasn't in the, I came out here to win. I came out here to get in the playoffs. He was always about the next, you know, the next level of achievement. But as a result, he inspired so many people, not only his other players or the coaches, but other people in the industry, but people in the world, just by being that example of someone who demanded more of himself. And really, that's what we're talking about here, demanding more of yourself.
But I think the one thing that Michael Jordan did that kind of set the bar for other professional athletes that have hit that type, that level of success, he knew he couldn't do it alone.
Right.
So he hired a coach to build his body in a way that he had stamina, that he had, you know, jumping ability, that his arms, basketball's an arm thing. And I mean, they even had a whole, one of the shows was about his trainer and how he developed his body so that he knew he could last 40 plus minutes.
Right.
Then you have Phil Jackson, who was all about team.
Yes.
Brought Scottie Pippen in and then Paxson and Kerr to come and all of these, Rodman, who was a crazy person, but he knew that he needed to build things that would support Jordan and what he wanted to do. And I just thought it really, like, knowing things that I know now. Now, 10 years ago, if I watched that, I would say, oh, this is awesome just because it's Michael Jordan and I enjoy basketball. But as I watched it this time, knowing around all of the habit things that I've, you know, been implemented into my own life and all the training and your information and all this stuff that I've learned, I really started seeing the big picture of you have to put yourself in the right spot at the right time with the right people. And I think the demand principle totally tells a person, hey, I got to demand what I want.
Yeah.
And then I have to align myself. And what does that mean? That's like a fancy word that everybody uses. You have to put yourself in a position in every way and that you're willing to go there.
Right.
And surround yourself with those people and learn what they know so that you can incorporate it and get the result that you want.
Yeah, so true. And I love that we're talking about the demand principle. I don't know if this is where you really want to go at this point, but when I think about, we're talking about Michael Jordan, we're talking about basketball, which I think I'm now a fan, and I look forward to the season starting again, is that, like, demand, the word demand is a word that's misunderstood. I mean, people think it's like a kid, like, or someone who's being obnoxious, but it's not that at all. Demand, by the dictionary, actually states that it's a peremptory or it's an insistent or peremptory request as if made by right. So what does that mean? It's like you expect it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the law of assumption blended with goals, right? You just expect it's going to happen. I don't expect anything else. I mean, I've shared stories multiple times of goals that I set for myself, which I had no idea how I was ever going to accomplish, but I set them anyways. And when I set those goals and pursued those goals, I felt such a great sense of certainty knowing that it was done. I expected it to be done. There was no other choice. There wasn't a backup plan. There wasn't some other, you know, A, B, C option here. This was like, this is what's happening. This is the only way. No other option. And I think that's a great way to pursue goals.
So on page 22, and I'm reading, I'm kind of summarizing page 22, the meaning of demand, okay? You say that, you know, you've made your goal, okay? You've demanded it of the universe. You're declaring your goal and your destiny, and you're believing it 100%, knowing that it's done. My question is, why do you think that most people say it or demand it, but they never get it?
Because they don't believe it. They don't believe it. They're not connected to the feeling. Like, the best thing you can do is feel as if your goal is already here now. That's how you manifest. You feel as if it's here now. You live from it. That was one of my morning manifestation messages. As a matter of fact, that's what I said today. That was the morning.
I haven't watched it yet, but I will.
Yeah. And that's what it is. So you live from it. And you know, it's interesting, Stephanie, that I was on a call the other day with my good friend, Phil Goldfein, who I know, you know, and Anders Hansen. And the three of us started this last October. So we've been doing this almost a year now. And we get on a call every morning at 8 a.m. It's 8 a.m. for me in Eastern time zone. It's 5 a.m. for Phil on the West Coast.
That's early.
It is early, but he's up early. He's up at 4 and he starts studying. And so, you know, we are every day we get on the call. And the first thing we do is we declare our demands. Like, I'm so happy and grateful that I have this in my life. Mm-hmm. And then we declare to each other what we're doing that day that is getting us closer to our outcomes. And so it's a good way because it keeps you accountable, it keeps you focused. And then we always study together. We read, we study, we discuss. And it was interesting. The other day, we're having one of our calls, which, as you know, we've had for hundreds of days now. And at the end of it, Phil said, live from it, or something like that. It was something like those words, live from your goal today, or live from your demand today. And I just thought how powerful those words are. Yeah. And phenomenal advice. I mean, he wasn't saying it to us because we're not already doing it, because we are. We're all doing it. It was kind of like reinforcing what we already know. So the more you can live from the goal, and where are you living from that goal? You're living from the goal in your imagination. You're living from the goal in your heart. You're living from the goal in your tum-tum because you're feeling it. Right? That's where you're living from it. So if you're walking down the hallway in your house and you're thinking, I'm so happy and grateful, I'm a multimillionaire, what's that feel like, right? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? You're not looking at stuff online going, I can't afford that or whatever. You're thinking, I can buy anything I want whenever I want. I always have an abundance of money to do whatever I want to do. You can think about the charities you're donating to and increasing that. You can think about building a wing at the children's hospital, like whatever it is, just really live from that goal.
So in the beginning, obviously, that wasn't the case for you, being able to afford whatever you wanted or go meet people or lecture on stage or, you know, write all of these wonderful programs and help authors. You began, just like all of us begin, with one book or one idea. And you said, I'm going to write this book. And even your family was like, yeah, whatever, you know. How did you make that change? Okay, you write the book. Back then, what was it, early 90s?
Oh, it was actually in 2000.
Oh, 2000.
My first book, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, it's not like Amazon and Kindle were very popular, right? So you actually had to print physical copies, which you put in your house. And then what kind of change did you go through that said, okay, I now successfully wrote my book. I have a message to talk about. Now I actually have to sell it, make money, and support my child and myself. What changed? What clicked? What changed in you?
Actually, Amazon was there at that time. Wasn't as popular as it is now, of course. I would say what changed is just the desire, you know, just desiring to get my book out into the hands of those that will benefit from it the most, which are the readers. And then I was absolutely committed to find a way. And I didn't know how. You know, I had sort of grown up in technology. Like my career, I've had jobs in the technology space. Not that I'm technically inclined, because I'm not. Like when I first graduated from school, I was working on a mini computer. And then I went to work for a word processing manufacturer. And then when Micros came out, I was there and I was a trainer. And I've been marketing manager and always been involved in technology. So in the early 90s, when the first company in Canada decided to start selling dedicated internet access, I was running their sales division. And so this was something that I was very aware of, the internet and what the potential was there, even though it wasn't as hot as it is today. I mean, now we've got billions of people online. And so I saw the potential there. So I made a decision that at the time, being a single mom, I would, first of all, keep my priority in check, which is being a great mom and taking care of my son, and also to find a way to do the work that I'm doing without having to be traveling the world, by doing it from the comfort of my home. And that's when I started marketing online. I mean, nowadays you can buy shopping carts and programs and you can get things set up relatively quickly. That wasn't available back then. I hired a programmer to program a shopping cart for me. I paid someone to create a shopping cart. When I was building my email list, I used to manually enter names in one by one by one. People would send me an email saying, I want to, you know, become part of your newsletter. And I would manually add them. So I've evolved with the internet. So when I made the decision that I was going to reach the readers or reach people in the world with my messages, whether it's books or courses, I made a committed decision that I will follow through. I'm going to find a way. And so I never gave up. And that's why I wrote my book, Be a Dog with a Bone, because I had not planned on writing that book. That wasn't in my goals. Oh, I'm going to write a book called Be a Dog with a Bone. But I realized when I first became an author, if you're not a dog with a bone, if you're not going to hold on tight to your dream and not let go or let anyone else take it away from you, you're not likely going to succeed. So I wrote this book called Be a Dog with a Bone because I knew how important it is to hold on tight to your dreams and to have determination and to keep moving forward to get to where you want to go. It's like course correct, you know, all the time, like keep adjusting, keep improving, keep, you know, finding ways to serve people in even greater and grander ways, which is really what you do, Stephanie, and what you've always done. You've got the right mindset for it. Not everybody has that. Very few people have that, but you do.
I figure if I can improve myself, then I can help someone else improve whatever it is they.
True.
You know, I've always wanted to help people since I was a small kid. Then I became a dentist. And then I was like, well, I can help people not just fixing their smiles, but also fixing their lives in general. And that's, I'm just passing. It's almost like I'm a filter. I just pass it through, right?
Nice. I love that.
So I'm curious, how did you align yourself with all of these famous authors? You have helped people like Neil Donald Walsh, you've helped Deepak Chopra, you've helped hundreds of famous people finish their books, market their books. Like, how did you meet these people? Did they come to you? Did you go to them? Like, how did that even happen?
It's kind of funny. You know, I love that you're asking that question, because when I first wrote my first book, and as you mentioned, I self-published it and I printed 3,000 copies of a hardcover edition that I had in my home.
That's a lot of books. That's a lot of cases of books, right?
Yeah, they were everywhere. They were in my hallway, my living room, my dining room, you know, they were everywhere. And it's interesting because when the truck came to deliver all the books, he said, where do you want them, ma'am? You want them in your garage? You want them in your basement? It's like, heck no. Bring them right in here, because they'll be going out the door as fast as they came in, even though I didn't have a clue what I was doing at that point. And so I started to learn about effective strategies for marketing online, because I thought that's my approach. I'm going to use the internet as my venue or my channel to get my books out there in the world. So I started marketing online, and then boom, sold out, you know, all my books. Then I created a course, started marketing that online. That was successful, created another book, marketed that online. Did another book. I self-published 3 books, and I printed all the copies and had them in my home. So I was like this shipping and receiving division. I hired a girl to help me. And so what was happening is I was getting all kinds of results. And when you're online, you're visible, right? People see you. And I got a call one day from Hay House, who ended up ultimately publishing 4 of my books. But Hay House called me. And I had been buying all Louise Hay's books and Wayne Dyer and, you know, many of their Hay House authors for years. So I got a call from the good folks at Hay House saying, can we hire you to teach our marketing department how to market online? So I said, sure. So they flew me to San Diego and went up to Carlsbad, California, where their office is. They flew me in and I taught their marketing team how to market online. So that gave me exposure to Hay House. So they got to see who I am and what I can do. And of course, I'm naturally a teacher. I've been teaching all my adult life. That was one of my very, very first jobs. And I love teaching. So I started teaching it to them. Well, then they called me not that long after that and said, we have one of our authors. It's Robin Sharma. He wrote The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. He's a fellow Canadian. He lives in Richmond Hill area, which is where I was born and raised. And he was releasing a new book, or had released a book. He had released a book called The Saint, the Surfer, and the CEO, but it wasn't doing well. And so the truth is that you could release a book and have it be a big hit. Doesn't mean your next one's going to be a big hit. You still have to market the book. And so they called me and said, would I be willing to help promote Robin Sharma's book? So I said, sure. So they paid me to help with the promotion of his book. And not only did I, you know, do a big campaign for his book, but we got to number one, like the number one spot in the world. And so the day that that happened, Robin Sharma sent me like 24 long stem roses. I'll always remember that. And so what happens is, you know, people that are in this space, they tend to know each other. So Wayne Dyer and Marianne Williamson are friends, you know, Deepak Chopra is a friend and, you know, Jack Canfield's a friend. And so once I did that for Hay House and then Robin Sharma, then Marianne Williamson's calling me. And she, you know, she called one day. I was actually at the movie theater with my son. It was the middle of an afternoon. He must have been on a PD day or something like that. I'm at the movies and my phone rings. I don't recognize the number. It goes to voicemail. And I get out of the theater and I listen to my voicemail. And it's a voicemail message from Marianne Williamson. And it went something like this. Hey, Peggy, my name is Marianne Williamson. I don't know if you know me or not. I'm thinking, know you? I have everything you've ever released. And I was a huge fan of Marianne Williamson. And so she said, you know, I've launched a book. What was it called? The Gift of Change? The Gift of Love? I'm trying to remember the name of it. Anyways, she said, I want your help because it's not doing well. And of course, with the internet now, and you seem to know that space. And so she hired me. And Wayne Dyer hired me, Neil Donald Walsh hired me. I mean, this is just sort of, it became a word of mouth thing. I wasn't promoting myself to these people. It became a word of mouth.
Wow.
And it was because of my experience, because of my results, really.
Yeah. That's crazy. So basically, when you start doing the work and you start getting success, things start happening.
Oh my goodness.
And other people start recognizing what you're doing.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm actually doing a podcast on that. And I'm talking about like the top 10 benefits of being an author. And one of them, the number 10, is you're going to be pleasantly surprised. it's true. I mean, you know that too, right?
Yeah.
You don't know who your book's going to reach. You don't know what it's going to do for them. I remember one time, this is after Denny and I had met. My husband Denny and I have been together now over 15 years. And my book, Your Destiny Switch, was released. And that was a book that Hay House had published. And we're sitting one night in the family room. We're watching a movie. And I had my laptop there. And I happened to look over and there was an email that came in. And I read the email. And I was so blown away by this email. I read it out loud to Denny. And the email was written by a businessman who lives in the United States, and I won't say where, just out of respect for him, but he actually had told me his story in confidence, and he said that he had been in a really challenging position because he was very well known in his community. He had a business that was successful. He was happily married. I think he had 5 children, you know, a number of children, but one of his sons got into trouble, and he got into drug addiction and some other things. And this man basically bailed him out and paid off all these things. But he put himself into a gigantic financial hole as a result of doing this, as a result of saving his son. Wow. But his wife didn't know it. Mm. And he was just dealing with this all internally because no one else knew it. And people were looking at him as an upstanding citizen in the world. But he was in jeopardy of potentially losing everything. And of course, his marriage, et cetera. And he got a copy of Your Destiny Switch. And the subtitle for Your Destiny Switch is Master Your Key Emotions and Attract the Life of Your Dreams. And he just started to implement what I wrote about in that book. Not only did he turn his life around, but, you know, he told his wife, he came clean, told his wife what he did. You know, she forgave him. But financially he was in a significantly better position as a result of implementing. And it was just such a nice story because he was at a point where he was thinking of exiting, like just ending it all.
He was at rock bottom.
Rock bottom, dark place, you know, and I've been there. I had that experience myself, like many, many years ago before I even met Bob Proctor. And it's not a fun place to be. It's a horrific place to be. And he was there, and the book really changed his life. And I talk about it in Your Destiny Switch, where I was in my dark time and my dark place. And so I think you really resonated with that. And so I read this story to Denny, you know, that I received in this email. I said, hey, Denny, listen to this. And after I finished reading the email, Denny said to me, now your work is done. It's like, no, it's not. Like, my work's not done.
I'm just getting started.
Exactly. I'm just getting started, baby. This is just the beginning. But it's the wonderful things that can happen. And, you know, as you and I are even having this conversation here, like, we never know who we're going to reach or how it's going to impact people. But I do know this, when you put good out there in the world, good comes back. Always does, always will.
So I was part of your group last year, and most of us were newbies. We're trying to, you know, get our message out there with products and coaching and, you know, whatnot. And what habits did you see that were different in us being the new, most of us were newbies, some weren't, but most of us were newbies. What habits did you see from us compared to other people that you have worked with as the Deepak Chopras and the Dr. Wayne Dyers of the world that had already found something and found success with it?
Right. You know, I remember when, just as you were asking that question, I got an image in my mind. I remember a number of years ago going into the San Diego Conference Center. And if you've ever been in that building, it's massive, right? Mm-hmm. It's really huge. It can house thousands of people. And Hay House was running an event called I Can Do It. And they used to run these events on a regular basis. And they would have like 3,000 people sign up and go and listen to all these Hay House authors. And so as a Hay House author, I was invited to speak at a number of these events, these I Can Do It events. And I remember walking into the conference center. And as I walked in the conference center, I stopped in my tracks because I looked up and I could see these banners, you know, like they have in a sports arena. But the banners that they had were like Louise Hay, Wayne Dyer, Marianne Williamson, Peggy McCall. And I was like, whoa. Wow. And it was such an incredible experience to this, like, wow. You know, it was like, my name's up there, you know, with all these greats.
I would have been taking selfies of that.
It was so much fun. So then we were all sort of guided and directed to show up at what they called the speaker's room. And so I went to the speaker's room and, you know, Louise was in there and Wayne and Doreen Virtue and Sonia Choquette and James Twyman and all these speakers that were going to be speaking at the conference. And I sat there, you know, as one of the speakers, but I also sat there as an observer. And what I noticed, and this is the difference between people like Wayne Dyer, of course, he's passed on now, or Louise Hay, or anyone who's wildly successful. What I noticed is that they believed they were meant to be there. They just felt it. There was no discomfort with it, as far as I could tell. Anyways, they just had such a level of conviction and certainty that this is what they're meant to do and where they're meant to be. And no questioning on it. Holy crap, what am I doing here? Should I be here? Am I here? Like that wasn't going on. They just knew it. And of course, that comes through in everything that they do. And so I think a big part of why we see wildly successful people, mildly successful people, and unsuccessful people is mindset. It's mindset. That's really what it is.
Do you also think that commitment and persistence in following their message and just like you said earlier, doing the work has anything to do with it too?
Yeah. You got to be the message, right? Like I've had people say to me like, oh, Peggy, it's amazing how congruent you are with your message. And when I hear things like that, I think, well, why wouldn't I be? But I do remember, and I won't say this person's name, but I do remember working with an author who is fairly well known in the world. And they called me one day and they were upset because I was helping another author in the same space, like in the same genre. And I said, I don't really understand. Why are you upset? And the answer was that if I was helping that person, that it was somehow going to hurt them. So obviously in a competitive mindset, right? Which is not a healthy mindset.
No.
In this particular case, like people who buy books, like whether they buy your books or whether they buy my books, they're likely going to buy many books, right? We surround ourselves with books. It's like a hunger, right? I'm going to eat this apple and go get another apple and then another apple. And we just want more. And so this individual was really not congruent with their message. And I remember thinking, because I had read their book, and I remember thinking, why don't you open up your book and turn to page 37 and read what you wrote? You know, I didn't say that, but that thought, you're not really being congruent with the messages that you're sharing in the world. And I see that, you know, I see that from time to time where people aren't really living their messages. And that's one of the reasons why I love Bob Proctor so much, is Bob lives, breathes. I mean, you're not going to find him any different at 2:35 in the morning than you will at 2:35 in the afternoon. It's same guy, same belief system, same, you know, emphasis and focus on the message. It's the same thing.
What do you do on a daily basis that helps you to live it, love it, and just succeed in anything that you want to do?
Well, I do a lot of things, a number of things. One of them is, the first thing I do is I grab my gratitude journal in the morning. But on top of my gratitude journal, I place these, they're laminated pages. And the laminated pages are my bank statements, my personal bank statements, my business bank statements, and my sales report. And they're already, they already reflect the goals as if they're already here. So I grab them, I give them kisses. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So grateful. I connect to the emotional states. I write in my gratitude journal. I do several affirmations every single day. I do mirror work, and I listen to my power life script every day. I always have a list of, these are the things I will accomplish today, and I check them off as I'm going along. And I study every single day. I work with my accountability partners every single day. I mean, these are the things that I'm doing every single day. Plus, of course, the work. I mean, today, before we got on the call, I've already had a number of appointments. I've recorded content for the author marathon that we're going to be doing soon. And I'm just active. And then there's times where I'll just, you know, lay in the hammock out by the water and I'll read a great book. But the books that I typically read are personal development books or business books. Those are the kinds of things that I read because I enjoy them. I just love them.
Let's go back a little. You talked about the Power Life Script, and this is a program, and you can iterate a little bit and explain a little bit more about that, but where we talk about the goals that we have already reached.
Yes.
As if we've already reached them.
Yes.
And we listen to that. We record it in our own voice so that we can hear ourselves saying that I am so grateful that, you know, I am a successful author. I can't believe that, you know, that I'm doing this and that. And well, you know,
I would say I can't believe. I would say I believe.
I believe that, you know, this and that. But anyway, I listened to mine this morning. I listen to it every day, usually on my way to work, because it kind of pumps me up. But maybe right. You can tell the listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's called the Power Life Script. And this was an idea that came to me back in the 90s. And the reason why I established a Power Life Script is because it is absolutely essential that you build the belief systems within you and you live from the goal, meaning you've got to feel as if the goal is here right now. So the Power Life Script is a process where I scripted out my life as if I was already living this amazing life. All present tense, only positive words, things that I can see and feel and touch, you know, vividly real in my description of them. And then I record them with lots of enthusiasm. And I listen to my Power Life Script. Now I listen to it 7 times a day. Way back then, I used to listen to it once a day. Now it's 7 times a day. And the reason is because it's reinforcing these ideas within you, that they become impregnated right in your subconscious mind, that it does get to a point where it just feels natural for you. So it's a process of building the belief systems. It's a process of getting into the spirit of your goals. It's a process of reinforcing positive ideas and concepts so that you become one with your goals. And it is a powerful manifestation tool.
So we talked a lot today about some heavy topics, you know, about how to change your life, start changing your life, and putting yourself into the position where you're thinking different thoughts. You're thinking the thoughts of success, of abundance, of prosperity, of health, of, you know, great relationships, of happiness. And what would you tell our listeners today? Give them maybe just 2 things that they could start doing today. Just 2 out of all these things that we talked about. 2 things that they could start today that would actually give them good results?
Hmm. Two things that they could do today. Well, now, number one is start a gratitude journal. And in your gratitude journal, write out things that you're grateful for now that you have in your life, and include things that you would love to have in your life, but write them out as if they're here now. But more importantly, feel it. It's so important you feel it. So it's not enough to just grab a journal and start writing, I'm so happy and grateful for, like genuinely feel it. That is the best thing that you can do right there. And so that really like reinforces the idea. I know there's so many people in the world who are patting themselves on the back going, oh, I write in a gratitude journal every day, and that's all fine. But are you really connecting to it emotionally? And if so, you know, great. Then you're definitely doing a very powerful thing every single day. The other thing is, because the Power Life Script has been the thing that's made the biggest difference in my results and in my life, I would suggest that do that. Get yourself a Power Life Script. Write yourself a Power Life Script. Stephanie has a link there that you can use as well to find out more about. We have a program that's available, sample scripts in there, guidance in there, training in there. And I mean, this is a program that's been used by thousands of people around the world that have really produced amazing results. It's going to take some work and energy, but I'll tell you, it'll be the biggest return on your investment, because it's an investment of time and energy.
And as I succeed with my goals, I change my Power Life Script probably every quarter.
Yeah, me too.
Every quarter, because it's like, eh, I'm grateful for that, but boy, I've got other things I'm grateful for.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the last thing I wanted to talk about before we go was that today is the last day of a new product that you are launching, and it's called the Author Marathon. So for anybody that says, gosh, I really want to write my own book, but I don't have time for that, what does this Author Marathon program talk about?
Well, you think about a regular marathon, right, that someone might walk or run. Why do they make a decision to do it? Because it's good for them, right? It's an accomplishment. It's so many tremendous benefits. So I was thinking about the number of people that want to write a book, or maybe haven't even thought about writing a book, but if they did, it would be extremely beneficial for them. And I thought, I'm going to create a 26-day program, like 26 miles, 26 days. They get their book written. Now, you're not writing all day long for 26 days. I wrote my first book in 26 days, and I just wrote an hour in the morning. That was it. And I didn't work on the weekend. I didn't work Saturday and Sunday. I just wrote Monday to Friday, got up at 5:30 in the morning, wrote for an hour. Bing, bang, my next book was done. I wrote a book in a weekend, as you know. And so I've had clients write books in less time than that. So I decided I'm going to get a whole bunch of people together. We're going to do this marathon, run this marathon all at the same time. And it really is how to write your book. That's what we're doing. I've got the trainings. There'll be pre-warm-up stuff. And then there's going to be daily encouragement. And then on the start day, everyone's going to just start writing. We've got a special group that we put together. We're actually designing bibs for people.
Nice.
This is virtual bibs. But it's, you know, it's kind of like the idea behind it. And that's what the Author Marathon is.
But you've laid out a schedule that if they adhere to that schedule by the end of that 26th day, oh, you're like, oh my gosh, I actually wrote a book.
Exactly. And as you know, I mean, you've got 6 books now at the time of this writing. I'm sure you're going to have more than that. You know what it's like by the time you finish writing your first book. It's a great sense of accomplishment.
I usually cry a little bit when I get mine published and I have it in my hand. And I actually have one that is, the cover is being finished now. It's called The Backward Rule. And
I like it.
Yeah. So you'll be getting a copy from that because you're in the dedication. So you'll be getting that in probably in the next month. It should be done.
I look forward to it.
So anyway, any of the products that we talked about today, the Demand Principle, the Power Life Script, or what we just talked about program, the Author Marathon program, all of the links are in the description. So you can grab yourself a copy and, you know, actually do something that you've never thought you could do before. And it will help you accomplish those results that you really want to do. So I want to thank you, Peggy. I'm so happy that you joined me today. You got me even more pumped up to keep writing and, you know, keep getting my message out there. And I'm hoping we can do this again sometime soon.
Love it.
So that's it for me. Thanks for watching, guys. And let's build good habits together.
Getting stuck is easy. Getting unstuck is not so easy, unless you know how. Whether it's personally or professionally, the steps to change are exactly the same. There's a clear-cut formula to living the life you want and deserve. Are you ready to make a change? It's easier than you think. Go to thehabitformulabook.com and get yourself a free copy. Remember, you don't even have to read it. Just do the exercises at the end of each chapter. If you want me to hold your hand, upgrade your order to the premium course. These principles are the same steps I took to work 25% less and make 30% more. If you seriously want to change something in your life, thehabitformulabook.com will show you how. And get yourself a free copy! Or upgrade to the premium course for even better and faster results. And get unstuck today. thehabitformulabook.com.